Picking up the many moving pieces of the Olympic Games and putting them back down a full year later will be a massive and complicated undertaking, involving not only Tokyo organizers, but Olympic committees and sports governing bodies around the globe, as well as hundreds of sponsors with varying levels of rights and plans. What does that look like, and can it be done at anything close to the same scale? While the world may be ready to rally around the Games as a unifying platform of hope by next summer, to what degree will the uncertainties of the global economy allow for it? We'll endeavor to answer those questions and many more with leading Olympics consultant on this episode of SBJ Unpacks. I'm Bill King, joined now by Olympics consultant Terrence Burns. Terrence, the impact of pushing the Games back a year is certainly sweeping. You've worked with bid committees and Olympic committees and sports governing bodies and Olympic sponsors. I'd like to touch some on all of them with you. To start with, thinking about all that goes into a bid, I mean, you've been in the middle of a lot of bid processes, and that's a good window into the many moving pieces that go into hosting the Games. How do you pick up all those pieces and put them back down a year later? Can you do that at the same scale?
Short answer is yes. The good news, I guess, for the Olympic world is that, as I've stated before, Tokyo obviously was ready to go in 3 months' time. They were in operational mode. What that means is they've done all the hard work, all the heavy lifting on planning, from venues to security to accommodation to transport, et cetera. It's really, I don't mean to make light of it, but they just have to shift it forward a year. The logistical issues for the hotels and the venues are serious and significant, but the vast majority of the plan itself is baked and ready to go. Your comment about bids is an interesting one because of all the bids I've worked on and the ones that were victorious, the games 7 years later often have very little to do with what was proposed in the bid. And that's just because of reality. Things change, things get better over 7 years, better ideas arise, et cetera. But even Tokyo's bid looks a little different than the games plan that they were going to lay out, certainly the costs.
So those pieces, those logistical pieces in Tokyo specifically, hotel accommodations, all the things that go into that, those you think simply roll forward, or do you think a lot of that has to be reconfigured?
A lot of it does have to be reconfigured. As I said earlier, what rolls forward are the standard plans around transport, security, et cetera. Hotels is an issue for both the hotel owners and people that are going to go to the games. The hotels obviously probably very disappointed because there's not going to be a lot of visitors to pick up the slack this summer.
Right.
But it's a matter of looking at what hotel blocks they have booked for next summer. Obviously, most of those hotels probably have groups for next summer. So it's an opportunity to have to move those folks around and make accommodations, probably going to be some refunds, et cetera. It's not going to be a simple process, but they have a year to do it, which is also one of the other, I think, hidden opportunities in all of this that most people have missed. I've never been around or seen an organizing committee that didn't wish they had a little more time.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think Tokyo's plan, what I've seen of it, and I don't work for them or I didn't work for the bid either, but the plan itself was solid, as one can imagine from the Japanese. Mm-hmm. I did work in Japan during the Nagano Games when I was with the IOC. So they've got an opportunity to take a very good, probably excellent plan and make it a little bit better over the next year.
If you're the IOC, and this is a very broad question, but I want to let you take it wherever you want. If you're the IOC, what are you dealing with now as you look at this unprecedented move of a games as the IOC? What are they facing over this next few weeks, few months, and then year?
I think their first priority, I know their first priority is athletes. And I was happy to see the statement from President Bah about if you've already qualified for the Tokyo Games for this year, you're automatically qualified. Mm-hmm. the games that take place next year. I think that, first and foremost, alleviates a lot of stress and discomfort for the athletes out there. You know, I think the IOC are concerned and have been about the international sports calendar. They want to make sure that the games next July are as least disruptive as they can be. And I think you've seen statements by Sebastian Coe about the IAAF World Championships possibly being moved.
Right.
So everybody's having to be flexible, Bill. Everybody's having to accommodate because no one's ever gone through this before. So, you know, I think the IOC and Lausanne are concerned about the athletes' safety, wealth, and welfare. They're concerned about a fair process to qualify for the games. I believe that, and I know that they are comfortable and confident that the Tokyo Organizing Committee will handle the logistical pieces. They will also have discussions, as you all know, with their top partners
right.
and their broadcast partners.
And I want to talk to you about both of those a little bit later in the conversation. But before we get to that, the USOC, especially you think about the Olympic world and you think about all the moving parts of different NGBs that sort of handle their own affairs. And then you have the USOC across the top of it. So the USOC's role as we go through all this right now, tell me a little bit about it.
Well, it's USOPC. to bring it up to date, they've added, as you know, the Paralympic rights and
that's right. That's right.
And governance into the old USOC, the USOPC. Well, you know, that's an organization that there's 206 of them, National Olympic Committees
right.
around the world. And their role is really to help create the team itself that goes to the mm-hmm. games. Each of those NGBs, as you referenced, are the entities that are actually dealing with athletes and dealing with competitions, et cetera. The IOC and its oversight of all of the NGBs is charged to coordinate, among many things, to coordinate the assemblage of the team and sending them to Tokyo. So they're obviously working with sponsorship issues, mm-hmm. Bill. You know, a lot of their deals, actually all top nine deals. This is the ninth iteration of the top program. That's why it's called Top Nine.
Right.
It expires at the end of this year. Top 10 begins in 21. So the agreement with the Los Angeles Organizing Committee, LA 2028, as you know, in a bid process in the United States, in a bid process anywhere, the National Olympic Committee has to turn over its marketing rights to the Organizing Committee.
Right.
Only the United States is there a requirement to form a joint venture, which is USOPP, and that is half owned by LA, half owned by the USOPC. They are working through, I'm sure, as I am with a top partner client of mine, working through the issues of rights either ending or extending at the end of this year. I'm not sure where they're going to net out. I'm not part of that process. But you've seen the statements from the International Olympic Committee in Tokyo that they want all of their OCOG partners. These are Tokyo Games sponsors with rights only in Japan. Mm-hmm. They want to extend those into next year. So there'll be some overlap. There'll be some accommodation that has to be made, usually monetarily and or extended or other rights. But I do think we'll work through it. The Olympic contracts are very, very precise, Bill, as to what rights you can use where, when, and how.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like it's super vague. It's just, I think, so unique. It's going to take some creativity and again, flexibility and accommodation to make it work.
So let's talk more about sponsors. Over the last few weeks, all those companies doing business in the Olympics world sat there, you know, in uncertainty of whether the games would come off as scheduled and what was going to happen. So what were the conversations around that? And when the announcement finally came, do you think it was more a disappointment for a sponsoring company or a relief?
That's a good question. I think they're all different, so I don't know. I can give you my personal opinion. Yeah, there were definitely conversations going around the sponsor world over the last probably 2 months.
Right.
I don't think this postponement is a big surprise to anybody, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
cancellation was never in the cards. That's a word that's that has a lot of implications from a legal and a financial mm-hmm. aspect. So postponement, I think everybody realized that was probably where this was going. And, you know, I have great sympathy for the IOC and Thomas Bach in particular. He took a lot of heat, took a lot of criticism, when actually what he truly was doing behind the scenes was trying to make this work with the recognition that their delivery partner, which is Tokyo and the nation of Japan, had to be on board. And they had to be on board in a way that, frankly, saved face and also made sense economically, given the investment that the country's made. So the IOC was in a position where they couldn't just unilaterally make a decision, even if they wanted to. They needed Tokyo, they needed Japan, they needed Prime Minister Abe to have, frankly, air cover on what was coming.
Right.
And it took a while. And yeah, it was pushed, certainly, by athletes' concerns. But I think it's interesting that the NOCs, namely Australia, was one of the first NOCs to say, you know, we don't really want to go. In the midst of this, John Coates, who's the former head of the Australian Olympic Committee, he's IOC member, head of the Juridical Commission. He's head of the Coordination Commission for the Tokyo Games. He's an Australian, very, very close to President Bach. It's inconceivable that this would have been a shock to the IOC. So things happen in the Olympic world quite different than how they happen in the corporate world. And I understand people's concern, and some of the criticism was probably valid in terms of messaging, but the process itself unfolded in the way that it can only unfold in the Olympic world, especially with Japan. I want to make sure that they were whole and they had an opportunity to show this as a positive as opposed to a negative. Sponsors themselves, as I said, it ranges. I mean, if you're a Tokyo sponsor, they have $3 billion worth of deals. These are companies with rights to the games. The Tokyo mark, only in the territory of Japan. And my experience is that local sponsors like that tend to be more fulsome in their activation. It extends longer. They do more things. It's, you know, it's their home country. Most of them are one-trick ponies, so they throw all they have at it,
right,
and get all they can get out of it, you know. And depending on the category, whether it's B2B or B2C or what, it depends on how long they're in the marketplace. Some of the consumer-facing brands probably have been in the marketplace a few weeks or a few months. I don't know when they decided to be careful and maybe put things on hold. So you've got some sunk cost there, obviously, in activation. The question is how much of that activation can be retooled for a year from now? How much of those costs can be recouped, if any? And then you have the top partners who they generally keep their powder dry until, you know, very close to the games, because honestly, they do this every 2 years,
right?
Winter, summer, winter, summer, winter, summer. The process is much more refined. They're much more judicious because they've got a lot more to spend on a global basis and also every 2 years. So their expenditure is quite different than an organizing sponsor. So I think the top partners are relieved. Just speaking for myself, I think they're probably relieved to have this decision made, A, and B, it takes away the uncertainty of the next few months, because truthfully, none of us know what the world will be like in July.
So if you're a company that, you know, a U.S. company or a global company with people in the U.S. and your U.S. arm is planning to take however many people to the Olympics, right, to the games in Tokyo, those plans were set far out in advance. What did those look like over the last 2 months? Did people start saying, yeah, we were going to send this many and said we can only expect that many? They were probably hearing, I would suspect, even from those who they wanted to entertain, might say, yeah, we're not up for that anymore. Was that going on anyway?
Yeah, probably. To be honest, you know, I planned on going, and all, you know, everyone in our business had planned on going. We've had conversations over the last 6 weeks about the wisdom of it. The sponsor or hospitality programs you referred to, generally those invites for July games, they don't go out until the beginning of the year, and they keep changing and morphing and adapting, frankly, all the way through the spring.
Okay.
You would pray that maybe by the end of May, early June, you've got 80% of the names locked down. My experience is that's very, very fluid. It's what drives people crazy in the hospitality industry, because these VIPs are changing and, you know, asking for exceptions all the way up to the last second. So I don't think it's hugely disruptive in terms of the timeline. Again, I do think having some clarity and getting that clarity out as early as possible has helped everybody on that side of the business. But as I said, all those hotel blocks, as you know, which have been accruing over the last 7 years, even the rates were set in the bid process. You have to commit to rates 7 years in advance to ostensibly keep people from being ripped off. I mean, right. I don't really know where they are on renegotiating or if the hotels are going to stick with those rates. They also have an annual index which they can increase with inflation, but I don't know exactly what they're going to do about that. But my guess is they'll hold out those rates and they'll just apply the annual index, whatever that is, for Japan that they've negotiated.
There is that really interesting dynamic that you touched on earlier with regard to sponsors and their contracts, right? In that so many of these are set to expire this calendar year, right? I don't think are they specifically written to say the Tokyo Games or no, right? They are through a certain year. And so what does that negotiation look like as you try to roll that over to the next game, particularly when, I don't know, a company may not feel the same way about its spend for 2021 today as they would have their spend for 2020 when they committed it?
Yeah. Well, the agreements are written, they reference the term, which is a 4-year term. They also reference whatever games are in that term. So, for example, the Tokyo partners, whose rights ostensibly, you know, some of them are perennial Japanese Olympic Committee
right.
sponsors, and their rights would keep going. Some of them are just did this for the games. An analogy would be Delta Airlines
right.
sponsoring LA 2028. They, as you know, heretofore, United has been the USOPC sponsor.
Right.
So anyway, back to Japan, they have already made the commitment that everybody who's a sponsor and who's paid for rights through the end of this year, they will extend that agreement. And they're not going to charge them anything, obviously,
right.
because they've all paid for something that didn't happen.
Yeah. Right.
So, you know, I'm not an attorney and I don't play one on TV, but I imagine there's going to be a fair amount of discussion on the definition of term and the definition of assets in that term, which is frankly the guiding principle in these NOC deals. I've also heard that the International Olympic Committee is probably going to leave it up to each NOC around the world to decide what it wants to do with its current top 9 sponsors. I don't know if that's been decided. That's what I've heard. I think that's a little problematic, but you have to understand there are 206 NOCs around the world, Bill, and they could go out and do their own sponsorship deals.
Mm-hmm.
As long as they do not conflict with a top category. So they can't go out and sell to Pepsi, but they can, you know, sell a bank. They can
right.
sell airlines. They can say anything that's not
any of those categories that are open.
That's correct. And the IOC is not a party to any of those agreements. So it's up to the NOCs individually whether they want to allow their current sponsors for this quadrennium to roll over into the next because of the postponement. And obviously there are a few categories out there where there may be some overlap, where there's a brand new top partner starting in 2021. Who has purchased rights for all the NOCs in 206 countries. And suddenly you have some of those NOCs allowing their previous sponsors to extend their rights. You can see there's a bit of a challenge there.
Yeah.
So if you're a top partner and that affects you, and there are 206 entities that are doing that individually, that could become a bit cumbersome. But I think that's the exception, far, far the exception, rather than the rule going forward.
What about the impact of the broader economy? How people are going to view something like, you know, entertaining on a trip to Japan for the Olympics, or how people are going to view, it's one thing to have the rights, it's another thing to activate those rights. That's an additional expense, right? That's not necessarily committed already, that's not locked down, that's not something that I'm going to get back, right? I've purchased these rights and I'm still going to get that, but the activation is an additional expense. Do you think that the uncertainty of an economy for 2021 will play a role in the way that those companies view this?
Unquestionably it will. To what extent, none of us know. And you're right, the sponsorship fee portion is a sunk cost. And in our industry, the fee to activation ratio has ranged, depending on which consultant you're talking to, ranged from 1 to 1 to 1 to 3 or beyond. Mm-hmm. And obviously, consumer-facing brands spend a little bit more on activation, above-the-line activation, than B2Bs, et cetera. But even at a conservative 1-to-1 ratio, so every dollar you spend in fees, you spend a dollar in activating, that's a lot of money. It's an expenditure that boards directors now look at much more carefully than they did even 10 years ago. I'll say this. You're not going to get any return on that sponsorship if you don't activate it.
Right.
Every sponsor knows that. Will the economy affect the activation budgets? Yes, it has to. Will they be depressed? Maybe, likely, in some categories. But you can't underestimate the power of the Olympics next year. Let's just say we're through this.
Right.
It's been blunted or it's
right.
Livable. The power of the Olympic Games to celebrate, and I'm not trying to sound, not trying to use hyperbole here,
yeah.
But I do believe it, to celebrate humanity's triumph over this thing.
Mm-hmm.
That has a whole nother level of marketing and messaging and hope and optimism to the already excellent Olympic message. So I am an optimist. That's why I love the Olympics.
Right.
I think it could be the most powerful, mm-hmm. Emotive, and meaningful games, certainly in my lifetime. I would be planning for that if I were a partner. And I think they're all looking at their messaging. They're all looking at their plans. I read this morning that the organizing committee, the gentleman that's running planning the opening ceremonies today, came out and said, of course, we have to rework our plans, and the coronavirus happened, and that's going to be part of our ceremony, and we have to address it. And it could be the biggest opportunity in living memory to celebrate our collective humanity in a new way. So I think those types of kind of intangible benefits and values are real, and smart sponsors will understand that. And I think you're going to see some very, very exciting and epic messaging around these games next year.
Almost a little bit of the way we've seen people retool campaigns right now, right? I mean, again, it would be a different mood, appropriate to the mood of the country and the world, right?
Yeah.
Terrence Burns, thanks so much for helping us unpack this complicated and complex issue.
My pleasure, Bill. Nice talking to you. Thank you.
Thanks. SBJ Unpacks is now its own podcast. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify for real-time discussions about the biggest topics in sports business. You can find links in our show notes below.